This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Hello, everyone. It's very nice to have you with us once again. Coming up, today we're going to look at an international organization that, if it was not for them, all forms of electronic communication would not be possible. I mean everything from shortwave, FM, medium wave, satellite, and the internet. Who am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about the ITU, or International Telecommunications Union. This past month, CKUT, a small campus community station in Montreal, Canada, is celebrating its 25th anniversary. We're going to be joined by Louise Burns, who has been at the station for many years, to talk about its unique history, which in fact goes beyond 25 years. Victor Gunatelica, our friend in Sri Lanka, will be on the program to talk about the final broadcast from Deutsche Welle to Southeast Asia. And what is this going to mean for Deutsche Welle's relay station in Trincomalee, Sri Lanka? Also beginning this weekend, the weekly 30-minute edition of the program will begin to air to Europe on DRM as part of DRM Mix. We will be joined by one of the project's key people to talk more about it and the future of DRM. Media Network Plus, taking you through wires, microchips, bits and bytes and wavelengths of all kinds. To begin, here's Paulette with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
Voice of America's Burmese service is reporting a sharp increase in direct visits to its popular webpage since Burma's government lifted firewall restrictions in September. The new data show visits to the VOA site, both from within Burma and from the worldwide Burmese diaspora, jumped to 807,000 in October from 640,000 in August, an increase of 26%. The figures do not include visits through so-called proxy servers that Voice of America has used in Burma and elsewhere to overcome government censorship. Burmese Service Chief Than Luyn Hutun says visits to VOA Burmese language social media sites, including YouTube and Twitter, have also increased. People in Burma look to VOA to provide balanced and comprehensive coverage of events there and around the world, and the recent lifting of media restrictions will improve our ability to communicate directly with the Burmese people, Luyn says. Voice of America's Burmese service has provided extensive coverage of the latest developments in Burma, including U.S. President Barack Obama's Friday announcement from Bali that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton will visit Burma in December, the first visit by a U.S. Secretary of State in more than 50 years. Mr. Obama cited what he called flickers of progress from the Burmese government, which ended decades of military rule in March. Burmese opposition leader and Nobel Peace Laureate Aung San Suu Kyi, who ended her boycott of the country's political system on Friday, has been a regular contributor to a VOA radio program, answering listener questions on a broad range of political, social, and economic issues. Australian Communications Minister Stephen Conroy has asked the Auditor General to investigate the aborted tender for the government's Australia network. Sky News and the ABC both bid for the 10-year, $223 million contract to broadcast the Australia network to 44 nations in Asia and the Pacific. But the federal government announced on November 7th it had cancelled the tender and called in the Australian Federal Police to investigate media leaks, which had suggested twice the evaluation board had recommended the contract be awarded to Sky. The ABC will continue to provide the service until August of 2012. The International Committee of the Red Cross and the Libyan Red Crescent are launching a three-week radio campaign to raise awareness of risks of explosive remnants of war. The danger exists in different places in Libya, but the campaign is primarily addressing people who are gradually returning to their homes in Sirte and Bani Walid. The heavy fighting, which took place until last month, left the two cities seriously contaminated by such devices. Five radio stations, Radio Bani Walid, Radio Libya, South Trablus in Tripoli, Radio Libya Al-Hura in Benghazi and in Misrata, will broadcast the messages six times a day. The radio spots are part of a larger campaign to educate people about the risks of unexploded devices. Billboards, leaflets, and posters are being displayed and distributed in contaminated areas where volunteers, many of them from the Libyan Red Crescent, are spreading the word of warning. BBC Director General Mark Thompson has hinted at a possible U-turn over planned cuts to its local radio stations, telling MPs, "We don't want to preside over the decline of local radio." Cuts to the BBC's 40 local stations in England, which will account for 280 jobs, or about 20% of their workforce, have prompted a bigger public response than any other part of the corporation's Delivering Quality First £700 million cost-saving plan. BBC insiders said they no longer expected the cuts to be implemented as outlined in the DQF plan, although they said it was too early to say how or to what extent they would be changed. DRM supporter company Spaceline Limited Bulgaria has started a special broadcast in DRM mode called DRM Mix. The project is intended to demonstrate reception quality to the listeners, presenting a variety of programs from different broadcasters who wish to participate in this project. Spaceline will be transmitting DRM Mix every Saturday from its station Noritus in Armenia from 1800 to 2100 UTC on 7590 kHz, and the target area is Europe. Broadcast this Saturday will be of KBC Radio, TWR, AWR, Wavescan, HCJB World Radio, and great music from the 70s. This project was announced during the B11-HFCC conference, and 30-minute slots are being made available free of charge to the HFCC broadcasters willing to participate. It is open to members of the DRM Consortium and other broadcasters as well. The weekly 30-minute version of Media Network Plus will be part of the DRM mix beginning November 26th. Keith will have the details later on. Special thanks to Andy Sennett at the Radio Netherlands Worldwide Media Network blog for the material used here today. For more reports from Andy, check out his blog, http://blogs.rnw.nl/Media Network, or you can find a link at www.pcjmedia.com.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, broadcasting to the Americas on 9955 kHz in the 31-meter band and on fine partner stations everywhere. Radio Deutsche Welle, one of the most respected international broadcasters in the world that offers excellent coverage of current events in Germany and Europe, has just gotten smaller. At the start of the B11 fall-winter schedule, they went from over 200 hours a week on shortwave to just 55. The new mandate is to focus on the Internet. But what does this mean for areas where shortwave still plays an important role? Along with a reduction of hours, they will also be closing their relay sites in Portugal and Trincomalee, Sri Lanka. But staying in Sri Lanka, the station is not exactly closing down. Deutsche Welle will stay there until December 31st this year, and then on January 1st, 2012, they will hand the relay station over to the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation. So what does this mean for the site exactly? What does this mean for shortwave in Southeast Asia? And what does this mean for the old Ekala site in Sri Lanka? To answer these questions and others, we're joined by our good friend Victor Gonatelica in Colombo.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service, with the program for Southeast Asia, transmitted from Cologne in the 49 and 41 meter bands.
Oh. Well, if you are talking about Deutsche Welle and the Trincomalee station, I would say, yes, it's history, but not really the station itself, because right now, as I speak, Deutsche Welle, the station, is relaying the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation's transmissions to the Middle East and Europe, or wherever Sri Lankans are living, in Sinhala. Frequency is 11750, one of the 250 kilowatt transmitters. So although officially the Deutsche Welle relay station is off now, it's still functioning for the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation.
Victor, what can you tell us about the station? Because there is an agreement that was signed between Sri Lanka and Deutsche Welle for a certain period of time. But now that Deutsche Welle has left, does that mean the property, the equipment, and everything goes back to Sri Lanka?
Well, yes, that was the agreement signed. I think it's back in 1982, where the Sri Lankan government leased out the land, about 450 acres, I don't know how many hectares that is anyway, to the Deutsche Welle. And there was already a relic of the great British communications base in Trincomalee. So even the present transmitting hall of the Deutsche Welle was a refurbished World War II transmitting complex. So the property still belonged to the government of Sri Lanka. It was leased out to Deutsche Welle, and the agreement was any day that the Deutsche Welle closed its transmissions, I mean, were pulling out, that the equipment, the whole thing, reverts to the government of Sri Lanka.
Now, with Deutsche Welle pulling out, have you heard any word from either the government or the SLBC, which stands for Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation, them being ecstatic that they now have this relay station, which is probably considered one of the best in the world?
Well, yes. The Sri Lankan government, or the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation, which inherits this station, is not just going to shut it down. As I said, right now, the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation service to the Middle East is going on Deutsche Welle transmitters. And the agreement is that till the end of the year, Deutsche Welle will be, will be running the station or looking after the station. After the 31st of December, the Deutsche Welle agreement ends and the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation takes over. I know from here and there, some officials, some semi-officials, grapevine, you know, the Sri Lankan government is interested in carrying on with the station. It's a beautiful station, absolutely fantastic. It's such a sad thing to see the station stopping its broadcast, such a fantastic medium wave station, and also state-of-the-art transmitters there. So the Sri Lankan government will run it. Only thing is, it's pretty expensive to run the station. So the Sri Lankan government is looking for maybe somebody would like to hire the station full-time maybe, or even case that doesn't happen, the Sri Lankan government will, or the SLBC will, try to sell airtime. So as it is, it's open to anyone who is interested in hiring airtime on it after the 31st of December, as I just, you know, hear from here and there.
That's quite amazing when you think about it, because that would be, for example, like the BBC Far East Relay Station in Singapore, them saying one day, oh, by the way, we're opening up, anybody can come in and then take over airtime. That's quite extraordinary. Now, Trincomalee, can you tell us a little bit about that area, just so somebody can have a better idea of where it's situated?
Okay, if you take the map of South Asia, you'll find Sri Lanka slightly southeast of the tip of India. And Trincomalee has the world's biggest, deepest, and the best natural harbor. That is why it was the British Southeast Asia or Asian fleet was based in Trincomalee. And most of the World War II Navy boys, they all know Trincomalee like the back of their palms or whatever. And it's a beautiful city, lovely weather. and I would say ideal to broadcast to Asia and even Africa and Australasia, because you have a beautiful all-sea path and we are right down, and the whole of the continent of Asia and the northern hemisphere is waiting to be transmitted to. And signals are pretty excellent out of Trincomalee. So it's a beautiful station for the Sri Lankan Broadcasting Corporation, which has an ailing shortwave facility, which it inherited, just like Deutsche Welle in 1952, if I'm not mistaken. It was the relay station of the British Far East SEAC, Southeast Asia Command Station at Akalla, which had a 100-kilowatt transmitter, Marconi. And when SEAC closed down, the transmitting station came over to Radio Ceylon, as it is. And also, the Voice of America built a relay station in Akalla in 1954. I may be off by a year or two. And when it closed down from Akalla in the year 2000, the relay station became the property of the Sri Lanka government, just like Deutsche Welle. So history keeps repeating for shortwave facilities in Sri Lanka, Keith.
The facility that was used by the Voice of America, is that facility still being used today?
Yes, it is being used. It has 3 35-kilowatt transmitters. Two are functioning. Most of them about running. They are rated at 35 kilowatts Collins, but I would say they are running anything between 25 to 30 kilowatts, 35, and they are cannibalizing their old transmitters, but still keep going.
This is the Voice of America with its final morning sign-off from the transmitting station at Akalla, Sri Lanka. VOA has been transmitting from this facility since 1953. Beginning tomorrow, VOA will expand its schedule from the new transmitting station at Iranavila, Sri Lanka. We salute all the Sri Lankan and American employees at the Akalla station who, during the past 46 years, have helped VOA be heard.
Now, when the VOA did their final transmission out of Sri Lanka, they even announced it on the air. Did Deutsche Welle do that at all? Or did Deutsche Welle just sign off like they normally do without saying anything?
I was surprised. I was waiting with my recorder, with my receiver, hoping that I'll catch something to indicate that it's the final broadcast to Asia. Not only Trincomalee, I think Chinese Portugal also closed down on the 27th, is it? Oh, I'm getting mixed up now. The end of the A season, A11 season. I thought they will make an announcement. Absolutely nothing. Business as usual. And they just went off there. That's it. I was quite, I would say, disappointed. Nostalgia and all that thrown in. I thought there will be some form of announcement, even in the news broadcast. I don't know whether they did, if I missed out here and there, but I thought they would say, this is our last transmission, goodbye listeners in Asia, to shortwave. Absolutely nothing of the sort.
So with Deutsche Welle now ceasing shortwave transmissions out of Trincomalee, does that effectively mean that if you were a listener, let's say in Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, India, and other parts of Southeast Asia, the only way you can listen is online? Or do you still have the option of tuning in to Deutsche Welle from their African relays?
Well, I would say if you're a DXer, if you're looking for Deutsche Welle with a good radio receiver and a good antenna, you will be able to pick up a few of the transmissions that Deutsche Welle beams out of Kigali to Africa. This evening, 15:275, the French service of Deutsche Welle, 12 hours UTC, came in loud and clear. And by the way, Kigali was used even for South Asia, because from Kigali to India is quite a short distance. So, but if you're a DXer, but I am just checking the English schedule of Deutsche Welle. I wouldn't say that there is anything which is at convenient times and strong signals good enough for somebody in Southeast Asia or South Asia to satisfy his desire to listen to Germany. On the other hand, yes, I would agree with you, Keith. You have to go to the internet, and I don't know how many people are going to the internet to listen to just Deutsche Welle. They'd rather do so many things with the internet. You know, radio is radio. Internet is almost anything from sex to information. Go ahead.
Well, you know, this is something that we've seen time and time again. When a broadcaster goes off shortwave, and I can think of two of the most recent, there's Radio Prague and Radio Sweden in the last year or so. They've gone off shortwave, and effectively now they are almost non-existent, you know? And I was talking recently with George Wood at Radio Sweden, and he said to me, you know, he said, Radio Sweden's days, as it's known as Radio Sweden, he says, is basically numbered, because they can't at this moment fire anyone because of Sweden's very tough labor laws. But he says it's just a matter, he said, when somebody retires, they don't replace you.
Well, yes, exactly. Because as I said, I think sometime back on your program, I said, Keith, that on shortwave, your signal, a station like Deutsche Welle or Radio Sweden, which was one of the first top 25, you are a signal one out of 25 that people stumble on. You go to the internet, you have your web page or streaming audio, whatever you do, your website, Radio Sweden, Radio Deutsche Welle, becomes one out of a million websites. I mean, even I can put information about Sri Lanka on the web. And millions of people thousands of people would put information about Germany on the net. So why should I go to Deutsche Welle looking for Deutsche Welle? What I say is, if you go off the airwaves, you might as well close down. You don't exist anymore. TV, maybe, yes, but not every country has a terrestrial relay of a TV program. Yes, BBC in some countries, CNN, but Deutsche Welle, my country, has about 35 TV channels. Nobody relays the Deutsche Welle TV. And I can't afford a huge satellite dish to go to Asiasat or something like that. Forget it. You're through, and that's the end of it.
Well, you know, Deutsche Welle TV is another... That's a whole other kettle of fish, and I don't want to make my views known about that on the air. But let's move it back to Trincomalee for a moment. You visited the site. Could you give us some kind of impression of what you had about the site?
Oh, as I said, it's overwhelming. If you're a shortwave listener, if you are a broadcaster, if you're a transmitting engineer, to see that station just coming out of the sea, more or less, the antenna towers, the low-lying bushes, and by the way, there are elephants roaming around at night. And very often they knock down some of the, the fences around. But what I say is, from the sea, the station almost rises up into the tropical sky, the blue sky, the towers, painted towers and the wires and all that. That's the outside. The antenna field is awesome. It's absolutely lovely. You start smiling. You start feeling happier that you're looking at something great. And then when you go inside the station, the history of the place, the old RAF, the British Communication Center, the buildings have been refurbished. But of course, if you look at it, you can't say that they are 100-year or 75-year-old buildings. But the history behind it and the modern transmitters sitting there, the consoles, the engineers, the local staff so enthusiastic. I mean, it's a beautiful station. Anybody would sort of, fall in love with it. And I kept telling myself, why would Germany throw this away? I mean, still another good 10 years of service at least, and still radio is not dead. I just cannot comprehend it, Keith.
The way, Victor, you were describing your visit to the Trincomalee site is almost reminiscent of when I went to the BBC Far East Relay Station in Singapore, taking a taxi there, driving, and Singapore is not very big, driving for about 20 minutes, and all of a sudden, with all the palm trees and all the tropical vegetation to see this station just appear like there's no tomorrow. And, you know, the afternoon that I spent there, I was walking around with the head engineer of the station, Tam Lam Sun, and he said to me, at nighttime when they go out, they have to take care because there are crocodiles.
Crocodiles
to elephants. Okay, now, Victor, one final question. With this station now closing, would it be a fair assessment to say that Deutsche Welle has now just lost millions of listeners in Southeast Asia?
I don't know whether we have, the Deutsche Welle has millions of listeners, but I'd like to say if it had, whatever it had, those people are sad and they have lost their links to Germany. You know, when I started listening to Deutsche Welle, it brought Germany in a new perspective. We were, you know, coming out of the war years of Germany, the offender, the Nazis and all that. Suddenly, Germany was projecting itself as a beautiful country, fine people, and projecting itself as a fine, as a European leader. Suddenly, this country just goes off the airwaves. And I love to listen to German. And that's the only way I could hear German. Of course, Austria has a couple of, you know, hours of transmissions, and one or two, maybe Russia or somebody might have some German. I don't think they do. But that's the only way I heard the German language. The proud German language of the German people have been just swept off the airwaves. I don't think that's doing justice to a great language. I'm very sad about it.
I was speaking there with Victor Gunatelica from his home in Colombo, Sri Lanka. Established on May 17, 1865, the International Telecommunications Union, or ITU, based in Geneva, Switzerland, has played an important role in making international telecommunications a reality. Everything that we use and take for granted, like radio, television, satellite, the internet, mobile phones, software applications like Skype, I mean everything, would not be possible if it was not for this intergovernmental organization. Bob Zanotti, our correspondent in Switzerland, now joins us on the line to tell us more about the work they do.
I personally have been down at the ITU many, many times when I was working at Swiss Radio International. I used to report on telecommunication issues and so on. And a thumbnail history. The ITU, like a few of the other UN specialized agencies, as they're officially called, were created for a very, very good reason. They're very pragmatic. They're not political organizations. They're technical organizations. The International Telecommunication Union used to be called, and was founded, I believe, in 1884, as the International Telegraph Union. And, of course, for those who don't know, and maybe some people don't, in those days, there was only one means of international communication, and that was the telegraph. International telephone service was not even thought of at the time. And so the need was there to coordinate the efforts and the technical standards of telegraph service all over the world. And then later on in the 20th century, this evolved as technology evolved. Things got sophisticated. We had radio, we had telephone, we had television, and that called for a more sophisticated organization, and it was renamed and reorganized and called the ITU, International Telecommunication Union.
So, in effect, the ITU looks over almost everything that we use, from just, you know, like you mentioned, telegrams to modern internet communications to telephone calls to satellite. They really oversee the whole gamut of telecommunications?
Well, let me put it to you this way, Keith. I'm a critical, in the best sense of the word, I'm a critical journalist. And I can tell you in all truth and honesty, the ITU is one of the best functioning and most important organizations within the family of United Nations specialized agencies. It's up there, for example, with the World Health Organization, with the World Meteorological Organization, which coordinates observation and data transfer on the world's weather. I think, for example, here in Bern, rather exceptionally, the UPU, the Universal Postal Union, which was founded in Bern around the same time as the Telegraph Union. Without these organizations, the world's communications, the data transfer would not function. You and I, and this is not a dramatization or over-dramatization or melodrama, you and I literally could not talk right now over Skype without the ITU. I'll tell you why. It's simply because in the evolution of international communication, electronic communication, every nation developed its own standards. And they had to be coordinated. For example, it seems very simple to pick up a telephone today, and we can talk all over the world. Nobody thinks about it. There are international access codes. But behind that are international agreements among all the members of the ITU that coordinate and permit the access of this international telephony, interfacing from one system to the other. Not all telephone standards are the same. We have the same thing in radio, television. For example, let's take our favorite subject, shortwave broadcasting, even medium wave, FM broadcasting. All the world has to agree on what frequencies are allocated for these services. How big is the audio bandwidth going to be? And then we have the issue of coordinating all of these frequencies internationally so that everybody doesn't wind up on the same frequency. This is the daily job of the ITU.
One final question, Bob, because we're nearly out of time. You were in broadcasting for many years. When you got together with your broadcasting colleagues, what is the industry's feeling towards the ITU?
Well, it depends whether in the West or the East, and it depends whether we're talking about the Cold War or the modern day. Some cynics would say, possibly correctly, that in the days of the Cold War, they laughed at the ITU because nobody followed it. The Russians did what they wanted. I mean, the Soviets did what they wanted. They jammed blatantly. They moved around. They went outside a band. I mean, it was just a farce. But I think today you'll find that the ITU structure is taken seriously because they go back to what we said at the very beginning. Now that the Cold War has been more or less settled, not completely, we just have, I'm listening on the 10-meter ham band here, we have Russian taxi services all over the 10-meter amateur band. They don't belong there, and the Russians don't care. So, I mean, that aspect of the Russians are still doing what they want and don't care, and they thumb their noses. But I would say it's the old story, Keith. If the ITU didn't exist, somebody would have to invent it. So I would say I would say civilized people, civilized governments, and civilized telecom administrations are glad that the ITU exists. It's a pragmatic and very useful organization.
Bob Zanotti, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Keith, as always.
Recently on the weekly edition of the program, we told you about a small campus community radio station located at McGill University in Montreal, Canada, that was taking part in a referendum that could have seen the station's demise. Well, the good news is, Of the 5,245 students that took part in the referendum at McGill, 3,729, or 72.3%, voted to support CKUT. CKUT is a unique station that offers a wide variety of programming, almost any music form you can imagine, a wide variety of social issues like gay and lesbian rights, women, the poor, are all covered. Louise Burns has been with CKUT for many years and now joins us on the line for a look at this very special radio station.
you are listening to see, I can see it. CKUT in Montreal.
Oh, I don't want to be locked out.
But I tell the Montreal and some of you do it on a Thursday afternoon. It's all about the conscious voice.
I need
it's on the positive voice show. I also take time to pick up Jessica down in Portmore for sure. Now watch some fears, girl. Bless up yourself, yeah.
Can keep my satisfaction.
Keep my satisfaction.
Fill my home.
Man like Earl in Montego Bay. Pick up my family, me in Port East, Portland.
Ja, hello.
I'm a Port Antony friend, them.
Nice.
Inside of Montreal and outside of Montreal. My Kingstonian friend. All over the world. C'est passé. My brother Asian youth, say, boy, I'm going to big up him, you know. Say, boy, I'm going to take time out and big up Asian friends.
Yes, bro.
Down in the East End.
And he leads the way all day. Oh, how I
do. All my Caribbean island people not to go and big up myself, y'all.
Stand up in a good place of rest. Good place of rest.
Well, the beginnings of this radio station are a bit of a mystery because its history actually goes at first to a club. And previous to that, I think it was just we heard word that it actually broadcast for a couple of hours in an evening on a commercial AM station for a period of time, CKGM. And we discovered in our loft the 16-inch glass, I forget what they're called, those recordings?
Where transcription discs?
Yeah, and that goes back to 1940. So, but in terms of the license, we have the CRTC, the Canadian Radio Television Commission, that gives licenses. And there's public radio, such as the CBC. There's commercial radio, which everybody's familiar with. There is community radio, which is often multilingual. Often programming is brokered or they're whereby people are actually purchasing airtime. And then there is campus community radio stations, which is what CKUT is. It's kind of unique in Canada. There is three currently. One, our Francophone side of things, connected to Université de Montréal. And then also now Concordia has their own station, CJLO.
Now, with CKUT, what is the relationship with McGill University? Do you operate separately under McGill University, or are you part of the greater university itself as a member of, say, a department?
We are independently incorporated. We're considered an independent student group. Our board has representation of the administration, McGill faculty, non-academic staff, and the student society, both undergrad and postgrad. The board is sort of like also comprised of staff and community members. So it's sort of the interest holders in the organization. But the administration per se does not have any kind of editorial or content or managerial participation. Most of our funds are from students and not from the administration per se. So we're more try to be accountable and inclusive of them.
Now, like other community and campus community radio stations, the vast majority of the programming and just everyday things that are done at the radio station, either filing stuff in the library or contacting community groups, is all done by volunteers. Is CKUT, like, for example, in the United States at campus community radio stations, the vast majority of volunteers are students. Is that the same case, let's say, at CKUT or at the similar equivalent type stations in Canada?
At CKUT, it's a mixture of both community and student participation. We don't differentiate. We have regular orientations, and we put the word out, and whomever has got that passion, that bug for radio, comes through the door. And those that also have the ideas and the stick-with-it-ness to pull them off are the ones that become our volunteer members. And they're a mixture of both students and community.
Now, about 20 years ago, I was doing some volunteer work at CKUT. And one of the things that I remember the most was, first of all, CKUT has a very clear and strong signal inside Montreal, but it also reaches to the Canada-US border. The second thing that I remember is that CKUT, for a campus community radio station, has a lot of respect within Montreal. And I mean, it's made it to the best of list a few times in the Montreal Mirror. And also, there's been a number of personalities from CKUT that ended up going to the CBC and TV stations in Canada, as well as overseas. That must be, when you look at that, you must think, wow, it's amazing how we're so small, but we can do this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very proud of our connections to Montreal in terms of all the grassroots initiatives and local music. And we really tried to be there at the beginnings and at the ground level for these and watch their growth. Growth is very much what the station's all about, not in terms of the station actually becoming quote-unquote bigger. Our budget is not huge. Our membership remains the same. The strength of our signal remains the same. But in the sense of growth, in terms of like having people come in, be inspired, learn a whole lot, and go on to do wonderful things, which really does happen. And also in terms of our partnerships with the festivals or the different initiatives in the city, we try and help them. The smaller ones or the beginning level, we try and help them grow as well.
Well, I decided to sit down and write a little something. But I said, geez, I haven't seen my friend in such a long time. Then I said, oh, you know what? You should listen to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. And then you wouldn't miss me so much.
Good morning and welcome to the International Radio Report here on CKUT 90.3 FM. The International Radio Report is a show about radio around Montreal and around the world. You can write the International Radio Report at radioreport@yahoo.com. Check us out live or archived on the web at www.ckut.ca and on Facebook.
Here till 11 o'clock, as usual, on CKUT 90.3 FM, www.ckut.ca, of course. Bunch of new music, well, a little bit of new music, some long tracks to throw at you for this morning, and apart from that, just some music, some great music, as usual, right here on Jazz Muck. Hope you can stick around. We're going to start things off for this November 11th with a piece entitled Peace, P-E-A-C-E, from the album The Shape of Jazz to Come. Ornette Coleman, Don Cherry, Charlie Hayden, and Billy Higgins, all right here on Jazz Muck.
Now, if somebody is not familiar with CKUT and asked you the question, what can I hear? How would you answer that?
Well, there's a lot you can hear at the station. I think the most important thing for people to understand is that there isn't any playlists. So each individual host is programming the content of their show. And it's in blocks. So if it's a reggae show, you're going to have people who are very connected to that musical scene and, speak to that and have that musical knowledge. If it is a bluegrass show, it would be the same. So we have a lot of, people who are pocketed experts in different genres of music. And in terms of the spoken word and news, we call our news community news because we're not trying to regurgitate the headlines and chase stories that mainstream media does. We don't have the capacity. So what we do is we go down into the neighborhoods and try and talk about what is happening in the world from their perspective and get very much about the grassroots initiative and try and get people on the air who you don't hear otherwise.
And I was speaking there with Louise Burns from CKUT. I invite you to check them out online. Their website is www.ckut.ca. And if you're going to be in Montreal, listen in at 90.3 on the FM dial. At the beginning of the show, I was telling you a little bit, briefly in the introduction, or very briefly, I should say, about DRM. Well, beginning this Saturday, November the 26th, the weekly edition of Media Network Plus will be heard Saturdays at 1830 UTC on 7590 kHz in DRM mode to Europe. DRM Mix, which is going to be emanating from Bulgaria, is going to be used to promote DRM. And for those who haven't heard DRM, I invite you to listen to it. It's absolutely fantastic. DRMX is going to have a wide variety of programs to highlight the reception quality of DRM. Ventislav Georgiev from Spaceline, the company that is doing this project, now joins us on the show to tell us a little bit more about this fascinating project.
Well, the aim of the project is very simple. As you say, not so many people know about what DRM is. And our aim in the project is attract the listeners with something special, with new interesting programming from famous interesting stations over the world. Some of the stations that even stopped broadcasting on shortwave. So our idea is to attract the listeners and to gain a new audience for the shortwave and for DRM, and to show how unique is this media for everyone nowadays. As I said earlier to you, internet is and broadcasting over internet is something very fascinating, it's very interesting, but just consider if something happens without internet, with internet, and we live without internet. So what will going to happen then? We have to turn to some other alternatives, and I think one of these alternatives is DRM. Also, it's according to my opinion, DRM has some specific audience, the people who like high quality, let's say abroad from their homes, and I think this is something very unique as a position DRM that provides, this unique opportunity for the listeners to enjoy a good programming abroad. So this is our aim, to show the advantage to DRM of DRM to the listeners and to attract them to buy a shortwave DRM receiver and to enjoy good programming. And of course, we are also aiming the broadcasters. We just would like to show them that shortwave has a future, and they have not to lose that quickly the hope and the, of course, audience, the specific audience of the shortwave. Well, right now we are targeting Europe because we know that most of the listeners of DRM are situated over the Europe, and we, of course, hope that this situation will going to change. So right now we are bidding 305 degrees. It's from Armenia, the radio station Noratos, and the transmitter power is 100 kilowatts. So right now we are targeting Europe, but of course we have an opportunity for broadcasting to India and also to the Middle East in the future.
Once again, you can catch the weekly 30-minute edition of Media Network Plus in Europe at 18:30 UTC on 7590 kHz in DRM mode. You can find all the details at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. Now, before we end off, here's Dan Hensley with a look at reception over the next 7 days.
November 26th, we have a 10.7 centimeter flux predicted of 155. Planetary A index of 5. KP index of 2. On November 27th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 145. A index of 5. KP index of 2. November 28th, we have a 10.7 centimeter flux of 150. A index of 7. KP index of 3. On November 29th, 10.7 centimeter flux of 150. A index of 7. KP index of 3. On November 30th, 10.7 centimeter flux of 155. A index of 5. KP index of 2. On December 1st, 10.7 centimeter flux of 160. A index of 5. KP index of 2. December 2nd, 10.7 centimeter flux of 160, A index of 5, KP index of 2.
Well, thank you very much, Dan Hensley. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus, the 55-minute monthly edition that's broadcast to North and South America on 9,955 kilohertz in the 31-meter band. I also invite you to tune to the weekly 30-minute edition that's carried worldwide on the World Radio Network, Sirius XM in North America, Sky Digital in the UK, as well as on DRM Mix, which is at 18:30 UTC Saturdays on the frequency of 7590 kHz. If you want to hear all past editions of the program, go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. That's www.pcjmedia.com and click on the link for Media Network Plus. We would also love to hear from you. Our email address is very simple. It's very simple. Yeah, it is. Really, I'm serious. It's just mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. To end off, as you know, for the past few shows, we've decided to end with something about radio. Well, we're going to end with a theme song to a show called Radio Newsreel that ran on the BBC from 1940 until 1988. It also aired on the BBC World Service and on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation until the 1970s. It's called Imperial Echoes, and it's performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra. So on behalf of Paulette Macquarie, all the way in Vancouver, Canada, and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Parent saying so long, take care, 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.